Peak Wealth Management proudly presents Finding True Wealth with Nick Hopwood, where we believe by providing education and guidance, we help our clients make sound financial decisions, which ultimately puts them on a path towards their definition of true wealth. Now, here is your certified financial planner professional and founder of Peak Wealth Management, Nick Hopwood.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Finding True Wealth. I am Nick Hopwood, founder and president of Peak Wealth Management, and your host today. Today, we'll be welcoming Dr. John Mynarczyk from PCS Global. It's Mynarczyk with an L, so he always says, get the L out of there, and I always get a fun laugh out of that. I've known Dr. John since 2009. We have breakfast every week as part of a networking group, so I've learned quite a lot from him. He's an incredible wealth of intelligence and information. And I've utilized his services with hiring people and doing my own personality quizzes and figuring out about my own personality, learning about myself, and then learning about other people and how to deal with other people for my own personal benefit. So think about this. If you know what you want and someone else can help you get that, how to, I don't want to say manipulate the situation, but how to understand what their personality style is and what their needs are. And with that information, it allows you to have more success. Dr. John's also going to provide a free offer for everyone. And so I spent 30 minutes with Dr. John today at my office, and here's what he had to say. Well, Dr. John, welcome to Finding True Wealth.
Well, thank you, Dr. Nick.
Well, yeah, I don't have that much formal education, but I really am happy to be here with you and welcome you to Finding True Wealth. I think a lot of people can learn a lot from you. I certainly have. But why don't we start with you telling us a little bit about yourself so people can understand your background and how you got where you are.
Okay, thank you. By the way, thank you for having me. I look forward to getting a chance to go over some materials with you today. Well, I actually am a PhD in psychology and have two master's degrees in child as well as developmental psychology and in the family. About a third of the way through my career, however, I discovered during my work with individuals that if I could assist them in being able to understand themselves the best that anybody could, then they would be better for themselves not only in their work environment but also in their home environment. So that led into our work in companies, and we started to identify about 20 years ago, actually now, behavioral styles or personality types. And what we found was that if we could identify these personality types that would fit for an individual within a company, that made it much more effective for them to be able to work well within the company and also increase their longevity. And then that started to snowball as it related to finding individuals that were not only appropriately matched for their company, but then they were to attract individuals that they more easily managed. So ours has been sort of selecting the right people and then developing them for positions. And we've had the privilege of being able to work all over the country and in several others, actually, where we've identified these behavioral styles to be able to assist individuals in their understanding of themselves, sometimes their spouses, of course, their children, and then, of course, in their work environments.
You know, in my own personal experience, I've found that understanding my own personality and why I do what I do and understanding other people's personalities and why they do what they do is very beneficial in life. I mean, every aspect of life, whether it's your personal relationship, even with your spouse, or at work, or, you know, friendships, and also maybe in acquiring new business, yes, right? And the sales aspect. What are the different personalities, and how do you know what personality someone has?
Sure. There's a lot of different models of personality types or behavioral styles. All of them particularly, though, about 2,600 years now, they've been studying these, and people have actually wanted to figure out how to be able to identify these particular behavioral styles or personality types. And almost all of them fit into a quadrant of fours. The first one is that we look at how much time and energy we spend in controlling our environment. Most of us identify that with regards to being in charge of a division or a company, or at least in charge of your life. Those people fit above this kind of horizontal line. Those below that horizontal line tend to adapt to their behavioral styles or personalities. And that doesn't mean that it's good or bad or right or wrong. It just means that they're less likely to want to take control. They're much more likely to adapt and to follow. And then if you put a perpendicular line across that horizontal one, to the left, those are individuals that tend to withdraw from people. They're not as aggressive or assertive. They tend to be more introspective. And then those to the right of that behavioral style concept is those that are more gregarious and outgoing. And those are the individuals that are more effervescent. They greet people. They're more excited about the communications with others. So that's the well from which they, you know, fill their energy pad. So what we do is we identify those particular quadrants, and then we use a questionnaire. It's a very simple questionnaire. It takes about a half an hour to be able to identify where in particular you fit within those quadrants. And then we've divided that up into 12 sectors, about a 30-degree sector. And each of those sectors then have very predictable behavioral styles. And then, therefore, we can identify the way we communicate with others in terms of their people interactions and then how they communicate with their environment.
Okay, so at a very high level, I think I've taken these quizzes before, many of them over the years. I definitely know that I'm above the horizontal line. I like to be in control, right?
Yeah, you bet. That's correct.
And I think that in terms of the vertical line, I would fall a little more to the left, a little more introverted, but not all the way.
Yes, that's correct. You're actually at the very top. Think of it as a clock.
Okay.
And the numbers on a clock, the 12 particular numbers. You're at high noon. You're right at 12. We call that an authoritarian. Mm-hmm. These are individuals that take control of their environment. It's not that they rise to the occasion because they have this sort of need. It's just because that they want to and they need to. So that's an easy place for them to go. However, in the authoritarian's particular situation, you have the ability to be able to withdraw a little to the left. That means you like to spend some time alone. My guess is when you drive in your car, you probably play tapes or some kind of a learning components for you because that's time really is important to you. Time is really important. And then you have the ability to, once you prepare for things, then you'd go to the right side of that perpendicular, which is more people-oriented. So you have the ability to be able to do either of those, but no question about it, you are at the top of that component where it shows the importance of being in control.
And you also talk about color coding schemes. And so is that like a derivative on top or a layer over the top of this box that you look at?
Yeah, yes, it is. So what that suggests is those people are at the 12 o'clock position, so to speak. We talk about those people as being red. And red is the operative color for energy based upon control, self-discipline, getting things done, self-starter kinds of people. On the right side of that red, that's the good part. In other words, we call it the blue-red. Anything on the right is kind of to the blue, which is healthy. Those to the center are the more kind of slipping into some distress, which would be they start to become more assertive in a maybe negative way. And then way to the left, where we're on the red continuum, we start to see people becoming more controlling, maybe in coercive, because that's where they're losing their positive energy. Same thing with the right green. Green is at the 4 o'clock. That's the 4 o'clock position. This is people orientated. These are people that are gregarious and outgoing and extroverted. Those individuals on the right side, they greet people, they're caring, they're compassionate, they're sensitive, they're loving, they're warm. If they start to lose some of that blue energy that we refer to, kind of midline, then they might become more stumbling in their words, a little more reticent, a little more anxious. And then to the far left of that, where they start to really become energy draining, they become more likely to experience a sense of loss or sadness and maybe even depression. And then at the 8 o'clock on this clock, so to speak, on our behavioral styles profile, these are individuals that we call gray. And the gray on the right side, they reflect. They're very introverted, and they think about the world, and they're the greatest of the thinkers, like an Einstein. Toward the middle of that, they start to become more withdrawn and maybe not as even assertive as they can be. And to the far left, they may become even withdrawn to the point where they're into themselves.
All right, so at 12 o'clock, you have the red leader.
Yes,
person
that's right.
In control.
Yep, that's right.
At 3-4 o'clock, you have the green person, who is the people person.
Yep, that's the nurturetarian.
They hug everyone.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. Okay. That's right.
And then 9 o'clock is your engineer, the gray engineer, the introvert.
Yep,
right?
The 8 or 9 o'clock. Yep, that's
right. What about who's 6 o'clock?
6 o'clock, those folks we call the humanitarians. These are individuals that split that line, remember, the perpendicular line. So to the right, they can reach out to individuals, and they care about people, but to the left, they're very introverted. So kind of a Mother Teresa-esque person that has the ability to be able to be really peaceful and a calm, almost meditative.
I'm thinking like a social worker.
Actually, they can be some social workers. Social workers tend to be more in the gregarian level. They care about people, nurturitarian, and that they actually still have to do a lot of paperwork, and they do diagnostic work as well.
All right. Now, we left out one color, which is in the middle of the clock, which is blue.
Yep, that's right. Yep.
So blue is where, you know, we all want to be, right? That's like the, if you think of Jesus, right, he would be blue all the time. And then how do we talk about blue and then a good day versus a bad day?
Well, blue is the operative energy component. Think of it like a gas tank. It's like you fill it up in the morning and hopefully you find ways to be able to keep your psychological needs met. So blue is the awareness. It's like emotional quotient. It's the ability to get out of yourself and into others. It gives the ability to be able to use your other three colors, so to speak, or these talents, in a manner that is very proactive and positive. So we have classes on Grow Your Blue. Don't get that confused with Go Blue. but I really do think that if we know how to be able to get out of our own selves and get into others, empathy, and to be able to look at other situations from another person's point of view, and if we have our own tank, so to speak, filled with this energy of blue, which we do actually do a lot of classes on how to help people to grow that blue, it helps them to be able to get out of situations, to stay out of situations, and to be able to get into positive, proactive parts of your behavioral styles.
All right, so let's say I figure out what my personality is, and then I have learned, you know, how I am going to respond on a good day, and how I'm going to respond to something on a bad day.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. You know, that having that self knowledge, right, is really important, right?
Well, we think so, Nick. If I may, what that means is that if we now know that we have our predictable warning signs. So in your case, for instance, the person that has a high authoritarian need, that means that you're going to take charge. And so if you're in a situation where time is being wasted or money's being frugally spent or somehow it's being...
You're just sending chills up my spine right now.
I saw you kind of cringe. Right? That's actually interesting, but it's the truth. And that's what makes you so good in what you do, is because you take your assets and then you apply that to your job and to the people that you work with. The irony of that is, if we start to have our own distressors, things are not going well, you're having a flat tire coming in the morning and you're late for a meeting, because time is really important, by the way, to the authoritarians. So if you come in late and you have a problem with your tire and you had an argument with your wife, I know that's never happened, but if in case you did, then you come in the morning and someone says, "Oh, hi, can I have a hug?" This would be the not time to ask Nick for a hug.
This
is not easy for you to be able to move in that direction. However, what's nice about this is that if you know how to nurture yourself in a healthy way, so that means you sit down, you get your cup of coffee, you end up starting to structure your day, you look at your schedule, you make sure you follow up on specific things that you need to get control of, then you're going to start to feel that blue kind of recover and to come back into the positive right side.
And then I can have a hug.
Then you can, actually, that's true. I think, if I'm not mistaken, we did hug once.
We did.
Yeah. I mean, in a loving sort of way. Right.
But we had to wait till it was a good day.
It was a good day. But yeah, that's when we want to recover as quickly as we can from those distressed moments. And that's where we want to learn how to take care of our blue. We want to be able to take care of our red in your case, green if you care about people, or gray if you need to retreat from a solitarian standpoint.
All right, now, this is a good transition, because we're talking about the hugging and is it a good time for a hug or a bad time. So if I'm good at reading other people and I can see that you're not in your blue state, you're not in your calm, you know, you're having a bad day, I'm going to be smart enough to know not to try and give you a hug.
That's exactly right.
Right.
In fact, let me give you an example.
Go ahead.
Give me an example of that. What that means is that if your blue is healthy and strong enough that day, then you have the ability to get out of your own self and look at others. And that's the ability that we're looking for. So if you as a red, kind of a strong, authoritarian, take charge person, if you have the ability to be in a good state of mind and your blue love tank is filled up or health tank is filled up, then you can look at the other individuals around you to make sure their needs are taken care of. That's what we look for in management. So in management or leadership. So if I'm in a state where I'm a leader and I'm looking at the people that look up to me and I notice one of my individuals has having difficulty or that you can notice that they're not doing well, then if I know they're a high green, for instance, they're a loving, caring, sharing, nurturing kind of individual, what I would do is I would let that person know not about work, but about them. And I would look at them and I'd say, you know, Gladys, you know, I can see that you're not as effervescent as you normally are. What can I do to help you out? Or give that person a nice nod or get them some hot chocolate. Do things for them that allows them to feel comfortable. And when they feel comfortable, boy, can they think clearly.
Now, as a leader, right, as a manager, I want to make sure I surround myself with people that are sharing the same blue, and they're blue most of the time. True. They have a positive attitude, all these things. And I don't necessarily care as much about the technical expertise. So in our case, how good they are understanding financials. Leave that up to me, okay? Yeah. I want a team member who has the good attitude and all those other things. So how do people use this information to make sure they make the right hire and surround mm-hmm. themselves with the right people? Because it's true that you are the average of the five people that you surround yourself with, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's a really learned question. I'm actually proud of the way you asked that question because that tells me that you've done work in this field. We really suggest you hire for the attitude and you train the skills.
Yeah, that's right. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah.
I think so, too. And so that doesn't mean that skills are important. Obviously, they're very important. But we now know about capacity. So, for instance, one of the things that we do now as a company is we actually have an instrument. It's called the MAUI. And we actually administer this for selection. And it's used to select individuals for leadership and management, for sales, for customer service, for general administrative tasks. And then we take a look at the way in which that individual lines up in these multiple grids. Mm-hmm. And then we look at their ability to be able to learn, their capacity, we call it kind of blue. And then we take a look at the way in which that position that they're looking for is going to kind of play out. And then we compare their skills with the last, let's say, 25,000 people who have been successful at those jobs. And now we have a good read on that person in that job. What we also do is we assess the individuals within the team that that person's going to be working with. So now we know whether that person's going to be successful as a person doing that job, and we can make some very clear predictions on how successful that person will be working for you or in that company or in that department.
So does it matter what industry it is, or does it matter if it's a big company or a small company? And are you seeing success with people using these types of questionnaires and programs?
Yeah, great question. Also, first off, no, it actually does not matter. These are traits that we're measuring that go back to our early development. Let me take a digression for a second. We believe that the majority of our personality is locked in by the age of 5, mm-hmm. never later than 8, almost always by 3. In fact, they say that if the average American today in our country or in any culture, actually, the average person today has somewhere between 40,000 and 60,000 thoughts a day. You take the average of those at, say, 50,000. Then that means impressions. And, by the way, the potential to interpret those as well, which is what we work with in our clinical side. But let's stick with the 50,000 impressions a day. The average person then having 50,000 impressions a day and knowing that the ages of birth to 5, those individuals learn somewhere between 7 and 12 times faster than you and I. Mm. So that means 50,000 impressions, let's take the lower level of 7. So if it's a 7 times multiplier of this 50,000 a day, that's 635 million impressions that this individual has had until they're 5. Those are indelible kinds of impressions. And here's the irony. Most of those impressions you don't remember.
Yeah.
That means our beta brainwave wasn't effective at that time, and so we just memorized those like a sponge, and it became who we are. About 80% of our personality is locked in by
the
age of
5. That's remarkable.
Right?
It's hard to even believe.
Right? Yeah. And then you start to realize, though, that many people who have really started to do a personal growth and development, we start to identify and unpack those and realize that they do today as an adult. 25, 30, 40, 50, 60 years later, the behaviors and their attitudes based upon this first 5 years of life. Why that's important. If we now then can help people to realize that life has opportunities for choice. You can retrain your brain. There's this neuroplasticity concept that you can actually retrain your brain to do things as well or better than you actually had the habit to do. What we now know then is these habits are like, we call them behavioral styles. These habits or behavioral styles, some call it personality type, then carry over. And what we can then do is we can help individuals, once they're selected for positions, we can help them to develop the skills that they need to be able to be successful in a job. That's where we think that this is so important, is we help individuals identify who they've been and decide whether or not that's who they want to be.
Wow. A lot of people maybe decide they need to make a change.
Yes.
Yeah.
And frankly, the nice thing about that is that it's actually not scary. I mean, when you realize that life is a choice and you have the opportunity to be able to choose whether you want to take a look at certain activities or situations from the standpoint of, like, we think that you can't avoid pain, but you can choose to whether you suffer. And the same thing with how you enjoy life. It's like your ability to be able to choose a path and then to kind of mid-course correct on the sets of behaviors that are no longer functioning in a healthy way for you.
Well, as I was sharing with you before we started recording, I recently wrote an article about what people's biggest asset is, and it's not their 401k, and it's not their house, at least for young people, for the millennial generation. So I made the case that reading personal growth and development books would really help them with their career. And their future earning power, their career, is their biggest asset if you're in your 20s and 30s.
Sure.
So how can we, you know, let's start with that point, and let me know if you think that that's true, and then how can understanding personalities and everything help contribute to your career path?
That's such a good question. We actually assess individuals for what we call their natural capacity, and at the same time, we actually assess them for their adapted capacity. Meaning, we now know that the closer you are in your day-to-day activities that mirror your natural capacities in these behavioral styles, if what you're doing mirrors who you really are, then we know that you reduce your risk of any diseases and any kind of sick time and longer longevity. So if you're in the right place at the right time, so to speak, and you're doing the things that come naturally to you, that you don't have to adapt to be able to make them work, it's like, I'm 5'9", so I couldn't be a professional basketball player. I could have been, but I maybe wouldn't have the talent, but I wasn't tall enough to be a center. But I am too tall to be a jockey. So if you look at those kind of overt traits and you think about, can we identify the internal traits of a person's behavior? If we can identify their traits that are based upon doing the things that come naturally to them and grow those as opposed to trying to turn the person inside out to do something that's not natural, they are much more likely to succeed.
I remember taking those quizzes, you know, in high school, like, what do you want to be when you grow up, right? And I don't remember what it said, but it was wrong. What about that? What about that factor?
Yeah. Right. Well, there are some of those things that are wrong. I mean, think about this. I mean, we get better and better as a society in all the things that we do in typical format. So our job is to figure out how to be able to keep up with those kinds of quizzes or assessments or questionnaires to make them more reliable. For instance, one of the assessments we use has been given to over 68 million people. It's been worldwide used for years and years. Another one that we use has been now given for 50 years, but we've revised it over the last 3 years. And we have another one that we use that's actually been given for 30 years, but it gets revised every time new data comes in on a regular, like literally daily. So we try our best to keep up with kind of current situations in the growth and development so that keeps us current. And I think you're right that some of the things that could, they can be wrong, certainly. But remember, self-tests are considered to be the most reliable. So when I give a questionnaire, I know myself the best. So if I'm in a comfortable state, I feel safe, I'm much more likely to give you truth on that evaluation. And if the evaluation measures what it says it does, that's going to be a much more likelihood to be accurate and to help guide that individual.
How much time do you spend with people on these types of evaluations versus just traditional talk therapy stuff?
Interesting. We actually have kind of, our company does kind of, it bifurcates, it has two components. We have a counseling facility in downtown Northville where we have 8 of us that actually do personal growth and development counseling. We do psychotherapy. We'll do testings and evaluations. The other division is our consulting division. And the consulting division works in corporations. We provide these assessment tools for individuals, and then we go on site to do our evaluation. In fact, when I leave here, I'm going to be working with a company that has 1,500 employees spread out throughout the United States and actually Puerto Rico as well, offsite in Hawaii, I think. But the point is that they have a core team of about 8 in their executive leadership team that we've profiled, and we're going to use that information to be able to assist them in their management development, their personal development, and in their selection. So we want to do it select right from the start, and then when we have incumbents, we want to develop them. So in answer to your question, what we'll typically do is we'll typically do a face-to-face interview. We sit down and kind of do a kind of a diagnostic interview or a needs assessment, and then we identify the structure that would be best for that person and that company to be able to be most successful. And then we provide them with these tools to allow them to be able to take them online, I might add. They typically take about 30 minutes, and then we give them a significant amount of information. It can be from, you know, 2 or 3 pages to 30, depending upon 35, actually, depending upon.
I think I've seen that 30-page report, and I think that they probably need to sit down with you to actually interpret it. Well, that's, at times.
That's fair. But now I'm proud to say that some of our newer ones actually take 30 pages and condense it into one.
Wow, that's nice.
Pretty nice. And yeah. So I'll give you a quick example. We take the research from a number of factors. Like, for instance, the one we're using now that takes into account the DISC, which is a kind of a communications component, which has been given to, like I said, about 68 million people. And when they take what's called the Hartman, was a gentleman, Dr. Hartman. He was a Nobel Peace Prize nominee. And for the work that he did on critical thinking and decision making, we actually identify the person's predictable patterns on how they are going to make decisions. And then we have another piece that's molded into this. It's by a guy named Gordon Alport. Dr. Alport was a 37-year professor at Harvard. And his lifelong work was in identifying these behavioral traits or these patterns, or what we call filters or motivators for individuals, through which a decision passes before someone makes it. So there's these 7 filters. But to the question, what we now do is that's in an amalgamation. So what it does is it comes out in a singular report, and then it comes down to a single page. And the single page is, when we're doing selection, we now have identified the 5 or 6 people in your company that the person will be kind of working with or reporting to. Then we identify the individual, and we look at the individual's traits, and we compare that to the last, like, 25,000 people who have actually taken that instrument and have been successful in those positions. And then we give them an actual score. It's called a Z score or Zenith score. That's like an A, B plus B, B minus C plus C, C minus D. And we're going to tell you the probability of success for that person in that position doing that work for you or for your company.
Wow. I want to change gears for 1 second. When I talk to people and I'm meeting with a husband and wife, and I'm asking a lot of questions and making recommendations, and at times things just don't add up. You know, it seems like I'm not getting the whole picture. And it makes me think at that time that they're not being truthful about something, or they're not giving me all the information that I need in my position. Mm-hmm. And it makes me think that there's some issues from their past. And then I think of you, and I think that they probably need to go see you, right?
Yeah.
So what about talk therapy? You know, it seems like there are a lot of people that could benefit from talk therapy. You know, I've heard a lot of stats from you in the past. What are those stats about how many people,
sure,
you know, are in talk therapy or should be, and how has that evolved over time?
Sure. Talk therapy is probably the most underrated, in some ways, thing that I think people do, because it's the way that we clear our souls. It gets things out of our heads and our emotions and allows us to check it out or feel it out with somebody else. Here's what we know, that they say in the person's lifetime, there's a 50% chance that they will, a little bit more actually, but about a 50% chance that person is going to be in a counseling situation, therapy, talking with their a therapist, psychologist, social worker, you know, pastor, something to that effect. Mm-hmm. So at any given time, they say about 25% of individuals are currently in a counseling role. So the old adage is that if you're talking with 3 of your friends and they seem like they're doing pretty good, then you probably better come see one of us. But anyway, the irony of this is that we used to keep the kind of talk therapy, so to speak, kind of in the closet. It was kind of a fearful thing, and we kind of hid away, and we certainly still believe in the confidentiality of that. But it's becoming more and more mainstream, like, where people are talking about things things like, you know, my investment person said this and my therapist said that, and or my board of directors in my life have told me these things. So we actually are proud that we offer a service that's in downtown Northville. And our job is to find ways to be able to help people to open up and to understand current sets of circumstances. We call that counseling, meaning where an individual has a set of circumstances that they may not get along, but it's kind of an overt situation. It's not like a deep-seated thing, counseling. Therapy, on the other hand, typically takes longer. It might be from 3 months to, you know, 3 years. Typically, it's shorter term. It's probably 3 to 6 months. But the idea is we start to unpack or start to understand how those early childhood development matters that we were talking about earlier, those first 5 years, or certainly the first 10 years, have influenced us. And almost always, Nick, when we do a history, we find out that individuals that are experiencing conflicts today, almost always we can track and pick kind of put a thread back to their childhood where those things took place, where they started, the etiology. Now, you don't have to do a deep psychotherapeutic process to get there, but when we start to unwind that and help that person understand that their influence in their days, communications and their behaviors with people are being influenced by that, we try to heal that child from within and help them to become more assisting, if you will, in kind of nurturing that child in within, and then to be able to put a new show on the road.
Wow. So we covered a lot. If someone wants to learn about their own personality or how to adapt to other people's personalities on a blue day or a bad day, or learn more about the group sessions or talk therapy and everything we covered, would your website be a good resource to start?
Yeah.
And what is the website?
Sure. We have two websites. Our corporate website is www.pcs-global.com. And our counseling website is www.pcs-counseling.com. And on the global.com, on the pcs-global.com, an individual can actually click on the tab that says Behavioral Styles Profile, and they can actually go in and take that. It's currently being offered free.
Free.
It allows people. Yeah, it is.
Wait a second.
I forgot what you did for a living for a second. Thanks. You want me to be able to retire. That's right. I forgot. But yeah, it's free. It actually allows people to get a real kind of a nice feel for what it is we're talking about. And then we have booklets that we actually can print out from that particular free website. Individuals can go online again and get that. They can always call our office. It's at 734-542-6969. Or 888-481-8771. And either of those will get them started if you wanted to find out more about themselves to work with their individuals, their families, or their companies.
Terrific. Well, Dr. John, thank you for spending time with us today. We appreciate it.
Back at you. Thanks, Nick. Have a great day.
You too.
You've been listening to the Peak Financial Minute with Nick Hopwood. You can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes and the Android Marketplace or by visiting www.peakwm.com. Peak Wealth Management is your premier wealth management partner. Plan, protect, peak. Securities offered through Regulus Advisors, LLC. Member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Peak Wealth Management, LLC, a state of Michigan registered investment advisor. Peak Wealth Management, LLC is independent of Regulus Advisors.